BYU-SN, we're 2 days out from BYU in Arizona. What matchups stick out, and where does BYU hold the biggest advantage? The Kevin Young era of men's hoops debuted last night in the blue and white scrimmage. What were our biggest takeaways from the game?
Matt Brown of the Extra Points newsletter will join us to discuss BYU's 5-0 start and the latest changes in college sports. And we'll really get to know the Wildcats in an Arizona version of Know the Foe.
Happy birthday to Kalani Sitake, who is 49 years old today. Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store Fisher Outfitter. BYU fans everywhere, it is Thursday, October 10th. I'm Jerem Jordan. We are donning the BYU volleyball pink out shirts to honor those who have been affected by cancer. Pink cougar tail, strawberry flavor tonight as they take on Baylor on FS1. But Shep, we're hoping this show starts like the blue and white scrimmage did last night.
Yeah, look, I don't want to brag. I've been working with the guys a little bit on a couple of plays.
You literally work out on the road with the women's basketball staff, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But I mean, I'm like running plays. So, okay. And there was one in particular, if we can show this last night, that I particularly pleased with.
This is the
right out of the gate.
The opening playoff.
This is the opening play. So I'm telling Yegor, right, you know, you get into the front court, and then
off.
You drive, you throw it up, Kebakeda with the dunk. They executed it to perfection.
As heard on BYU Radio.
Exactly. And the fun thing is, sometimes I take the place of Kebakeda, and it's Yegor with the lob to me.
That's a good trampoline you got going there. That's awesome. That was a fun start. I think Kebakeda dunked 6 times last night. This guy is a rim rocker. I think that BYU needs to preactively Venmo other schools. Just like, sorry
just
if the rim's bent.
He is going to make some opponents really unhappy because he is going to put them on a poster nightly.
Yeah. We need to make more posters. You know what I'm saying? That used to be a thing.
I
would go to like Kmart or something and buy them for $5. I don't even know. With the starter pullover jackets.
Oh,
you ever
have
one of those?
Oh, yeah.
Chiefs one or something? Cardinals?
No, I think it was a BYU one.
You had a BYU one?
I think I had a BYU one.
I had a North Carolina one because my dad was trying to indoctrinate me that way. And then my parents got divorced and that went away. All rise and shout.
There's a downer.
It's time for What's Trending.
Fox's national pregame show, Big Noon Kickoff, is coming to Provo.
The Cougs have another takeaway.
BYU has ESPN's number one strength of record.
Yes, they do. Game 6 for the Cougars Saturday against Arizona, which is a sellout, by the way. If you want to get in, you got to get secondary seats on SeatGeek, apparently. BYU is a 4-point favorite as of this morning. Shep, there's some intriguing matchups in this one. Which ones stick out?
Well, let's start with the quarterback matchup. I mean, obviously, when we talk about football teams, we immediately go to the quarterback. And we got two really good quarterbacks. And what Jake Retzlaff has done for BYU this year, he's really sort of solidified things. Everything's sort of calmed down a little bit. And now you're starting to see what this offense can look like when you get into a rhythm. On the other side of things, what Noah Fifita has done, his ability to keep plays alive is what scares me to death about this game on Saturday. And it's not just the playmaking ability, but just his ability to move around until something opens up. And we know he obviously has weapons, and McMillan is certainly the top of that list. But the quarterback matchup to me is super intriguing. And which quarterback can move their offense and not turn the ball over?
Noah Fifita is a cool customer, dude. He reminds me of Russell Wilson when Russell Wilson was good at football. 5'10". He's got the three braids poking out of the helmet. He's got the hoodie, too. He's fun to watch. Like, had a dynamic freshman season last year. They walked into this year with a couple of wins and had a 9-game win streak, which was the longest in the country, until they went to Kansas State. They got blown out, and you're like, what was that? But they go up to Salt Lake, and they beat Utah. So they certainly have BYU's attention. They lose a home game to Texas Tech last week, which was a little weird. Jake Retzlaff, however, has a better yards per attempt, quarterback rating, more touchdowns, fewer interceptions, and a higher PFF grade. I don't think we think that that's the case, but it is. Jake Retzlaff has had a better year and been a better quarterback than Noah Fifita. So I like Jake Retzlaff at home in this matchup. Talked to Jake a little bit after the basketball game last night. He is excited and ready, which I'm stoked. You're right. This is the number one matchup walking into this game. Can Jake out-duel Noah Fifita in this matchup? Noah, a talented sophomore quarterback with his high school homie at Servite in California, Which brings us to the next matchup. Teteroa McMillan versus Jacob Robinson. We think that as BYU's best corner, he is probably matched up with McMillan. Let's talk about McMillan, okay? He is top 10 in the country in some notable things. In fact, top 5 in a few things. All-purpose yards per game, receiving yards, 30-plus yard catches, 5th. He's 6th in touchdown catches, all of which came against New Mexico. 10-plus yard catches, 6th in the country, 10th in receptions per game. He is awesome.
Yes.
He is a first-round receiver guy.
He may be a top 10 pick.
He might be a top 10 pick. That's a great point. You mentioned this before the show, and let's talk about it. However, again, his best games have come outside of the New Mexico game.
Yes, let's take the New Mexico game. He had what?
That was exceptional.
10 catches, 304 yards, and four touchdowns.
That's unbelievable. The Kansas State game, those were kind of garbage yards. They're down a bunch, soft coverage a little bit. 6 for 50 at Utah is a nice number. It's not his nice type number. He was a good game last week, but they lost. Has he been as good as advertised in the other four games? But I think his numbers are a little lower than you would think. But you watch him play. He could go for 200 on Saturday very easily if BYU's not sound and schemes well. Jay Hill will be ready, but he is a dynamite player. You're going to see him on Sundays.
He is the definition of just throw it up there and let your receiver go make a play.
Yeah.
That's what he can do. It's his size. It's his speed. It's his ability to contort his body to make any catch he needs to. But to go back to the point that you made, in the two losses, taking New Mexico out.
You pointed this out. This is great.
In the two losses, so at K-State and then this last week at home against Texas Tech, those have been his biggest number games, 161 against the Red Raiders and 138 on the road in Manhattan against the Wildcats. So in the win at Utah, he only had 50 yards.
Yeah.
So his production in terms of yards doesn't always, and so far this season, has not equated to victories.
Yeah.
So him having a big day.
What if he goes for 10 for 130? And no touchdowns.
See, now, the touchdown part is the interesting part.
He has zero touchdowns outside of New Mexico.
He has four total. Those all came against the Lobos.
I didn't realize that until you pointed that out earlier.
So he's not had touchdowns again. Yeah. So he's getting the yards. He's not getting in the end zone. So I think making sure that this trend that we're seeing, he gets a lot of yards, doesn't get in the end zone, though, and the opponents win. That's what we need to hope happens on Saturday.
Imagine a 6'5 Austin Colley. Like that's what Teteroa McMillan is. By the way, how many passes do you think Jacob Robinson has allowed of 20-plus this year? What would be your guess?
One.
That's exactly right. One. Jacob Robinson doesn't allow deep balls. Let's go. Okay, next one.
All right, Takario Davis versus Chase Roberts and Darius Lassiter.
That's a fun one. Takario Davis is a 6'4" corner for Arizona that is a projected second-round guy. They've got a bunch of NFL guys. Right tackle's really good, too. 15 receptions on 33 targets, so only 45% completion when throwing at this guy. Yet, the catch is for 16 yards, typically. He's given up some deep balls, 37-yarder, 57-yarder. Good tackler, good in run defense. Doesn't have a great pass coverage grade, frankly, which is interesting. But, again, when you watch him play, you go, that guy can ball. So I'm interested to see the dynamic 1A, 1B of Chase Roberts and Darius Lassiter against Takario Davis.
So I want to take this a little bit further. So when you look at Chase Roberts, Darius Lassiter, I think it actually comes back to the quarterback conversation that we had a few minutes ago. When you look, this is just my opinion, Wildcat fans may completely disagree with this. I think Jake Retzlaff has more options to work with on offense than what Noah Fifita has in their offense.
Okay.
Because let's say Takario Davis does a really good job on Chase Roberts or Darius Lassiter, or you know the defense in general can shut both of them down. Well, BYU still has other guys that they can use.
Yep.
You can go to the tight ends more. You still have other receivers. I think there are more options to work with if the defense of the Wildcats is able to take out those two guys specifically and keep them from having big days.
It's a good point because one of your leading receivers is Kwali Conley, the running back.
Yeah.
They're throwing to the running back quite a bit, which he is a good player too. He had a nice game at Utah. The win at Utah really makes it so you go, whoa, what?
Yeah.
They won at Utah?
Yeah.
Even though you go, Northern Arizona was kind of weird. Why'd they get blown out by Kansas State? Why didn't they beat Texas Tech at home? You win in Salt Lake, that means your high is pretty high.
Okay, so let me ask you, they're 3-2 right now.
Even with freshman Isaac
Wilson. So they're 3-2.
Yeah.
Is that shocking to you? Because
yeah, I thought they'd be 4-1.
Okay, all right. Because I think most people, yeah. I don't know if it's necessarily.
They came into the year with a lot of excitement.
I think people would have, if you look and say, yeah, 3-2 doesn't shock me, but they probably think lose at Utah, win at home over Texas Tech.
Yeah, but and don't get blown. It's the way they played at Kansas State,
right.
too. It's not just.
And that didn't even count as a conference game.
Right, that's true. But that result, I was like, whoa, is Arizona not good? They got destroyed.
Yeah.
But we've seen a few teams that has happened to them, and they've responded well. Kansas State is considered in many of the metrics to be better than BYU, despite a 29-point loss at BYU. So, you know, one game doesn't determine your season. You kind of throw out the high and the low. The high would be the Utah win. The low would be the Kansas State performance. So, there you go. Okay, next one. BYU rushing attack versus the Arizona front seven. The run game for BYU, 4.4 pop. One of the lowest among Power 4 teams, I think sixth lowest. It's been good enough, Shep, like in spurts. And BYU's had to go deep into that well, and it's been surprisingly pretty good,
right.
All things considered.
Yeah. Yeah, and Arizona has been susceptible to the ground game. And if everyone, like we certainly hope and it sounds like, is going to be healthy and available from the running back position, that certainly bodes well for BYU. And let's not forget what Jake Retzlaff has done with his feet and moving around and getting yards that way.
Yes.
That has been one of BYU's best options is for Jake, when nothing's available through the air, for him to make those decisions and move the ball himself on the ground. So I think there will be opportunities for this ground game to get going, whether it's with the running backs or with Retzlaff continuing to make plays with his legs.
Isn't it wild that BYU's 5-0 with three halves of LJ Martin?
Right.
And three halves, it feels like, of Hinkley Ropati. I mean, the fact that Sione Moa comes in against Kansas State and it's like, I will not be tackled. Get out of the way. I'm just hearing Tecmo Super Bowl. Sione Moa is averaging 4.4 yards after contact per rush. Are you kidding me? That's crazy. He's forced 11 missed tackles. Both lead the team. Arizona's run defense success rate, 95th in the country, 43%. There's an opportunity to run the rock a little bit for BYU. Let's see if they can establish that ground game.
All right, and this is something that probably doesn't get talked about enough, and that's special teams. And look, it's one of those things, nobody talks about special teams for the most part unless something goes horribly wrong.
What happened?
But this is going to be one where BYU is going to have to pay attention to the Arizona special teams.
And if it's as close as advertised, BYU by four, special teams plays a factor. Who's better at special teams than BYU right now? You have a punt return for a touchdown, a kickoff return for a touchdown, a 54-yard field goal, a fake punt for 22
yards. Fake punt, love it.
Come on, man. BYU special teams might be the best in the country. Then you look across and you see Tyler Loop. Tyler Loop, the kicker for Arizona, is must-see TV. When the ball comes off his foot, it's like Spencer's and Ben Bagley's pitching wedge. That thing, or 60 degrees. It is high. Look at that thing. It's up and over the net. I think he put a 48-yarder up and over the net. Was it this one? Colton, I think it was this one, right? Up and over. This guy pounds it. And at elevation, we might see like a 58-yarder from him or something. He leads the country in 2.4 yard field goals per game made. He's scoring almost 10 points a game himself, 8 of 10 from 40-plus. It's weird to like be interested in what a kicker is going to do. I think they said he made like a 70-yarder pregame last week or something. He is interesting to watch. Don't forget that Will Farron has a leg, too.
Yes.
54-yarder a couple weeks ago at Baylor. I think Will's going to set the record, by the way, for BYU. He's going to make the field goal record this year.
Okay. Well,
I think he makes like a 57-yarder.
As long as BYU on their drives is scoring touchdowns, I'm going to let Arizona kick as many 58-yard field goals
nice.
As they would like.
Yeah, and I'm like, yay, it went over the net.
All right, so this is going to be an interesting question. Where do you believe BYU holds the biggest advantage over Arizona?
It's not on the field. It's the home field itself. It's Lavelle Edwards Stadium. It's the crowd. Also, BYU starts fast this year, period. First and third quarters combined. So, like, getting out of the gates in that half, plus 75. I expect BYU to have a great home field advantage and to start quick in both halves.
Okay, for me, I'm going with the defensive points allowed. And I looked at just the P4 games. So we're talking about three games. Both of these teams have played three games against other power teams. SMU came in averaging 44. BYU's defense held them to 15. K-State averaging 35. BYU held them to 9. Now, this is the one that kind of skews the numbers a little bit. Baylor averaged 30. BYU held them to only 28, so not
hey,
a huge.
Under the average, bro.
But in three games against Power 4 teams, the BYU defense is only giving up an average of 17 points per game.
That's a winning number.
So
that's why you're 5-0.
On the other side then, Arizona, in their three games, they're giving up 24. So if all you
Bronco
look at,
is like, oh, 24 points.
If both defenses hold the opposition to the average that they're holding them right now against other P4 teams, BYU has the advantage 24-17. I'll take that.
Don't let Arizona get going.
Yes,
because if
exactly.
they just kind of, right, obviously. But, like, there's a blueprint in a couple of games here. And if you get a lead on them, they become predictable. BYU's pass defense has been fantastic this year.
Yep.
I'm excited for this game. We all are. Let's go. Our question of the day is this. What emotion best describes how you feel about the BYU-Arizona game coming up Saturday? Are you nervous, excited, anxious? How are we feeling? Little Inside Out 2 reference here. At ABeach319 on X. Nervously excited. I believe in this BYU team, but Arizona has shown it can be very competitive. Being at home is a huge advantage in this matchup. Continue to weigh in on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
All right, so we began the show talking about the blue-white game last night. And for those that were able to be there, you got to see it. For those that were listening on BYURadio.org, you got to hear some of the highlights and whatnot. What were your biggest takeaways? Because you were over there, you got to see it. What'd you walk away feeling after that?
First off, the crowd was awesome. The crowd, it was almost a full lower bowl for the blue and white scrimmage. I don't recall seeing that much attention and excitement. It was awesome. You're seeing by the way behind that basket, there's three new rows courtside. They kind of pushed that wall back. There's going to be some LEDs installed there before the first game. By the way, Yegor Demon. Elite passer.
Mm-hmm.
Watched it, thought about it, talked about it. He's awesome. Kaba Keita, rim rocker, 19 points last night, at least 6 dunks. Richie Saunders looked even better than last year. Finishing, cutting, getting fouled, hustle points. Cannon Catchings is special.
Yes.
Okay, 17 points. He can get a shot off as a 6'8", 6'9 guy. The comp I've been told about him, and I agree with, especially offensively right now, is Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins is a nice comp.
I'll take that.
Former number one pick. In fact, after the game, Kevin Young took a moment to talk about Cannon Catchings when asked and had some nice things to say.
He was a guy that we really wanted because he's different than everyone we have. And, you know, he's a guy that can bail you out in a lot of dry possessions with his shot making. You know, I'm on him constantly about, you know, his defense. Not that it's poor, but I just think if he can really guard, it's going to just put our team and him in a whole different hemisphere because offensively he's going to be as talented as anybody that we play against.
That's
high praise.
By the way, at the beginning of the press conference, Kevin Young said, listen, I'm not like hot take guy right after a game. I got to watch the film. But he had that opinion. that says a lot about what he thinks of Cannon Catchings.
Yeah, look, he was certainly one of the guys that really popped last night that stands out. I think the first takeaway that I had was that none of my excitement or enthusiasm for this upcoming season or about any of these players was dampened at all.
Nothing.
Like, there was not one thing that I was disappointed with. There was not one thing that didn't live up to what I was hoping it would.
Only maybe Trevenel going 1-for-11, 1-for-10 from
but
three. But honestly, it's the blue and white scrimmage.
That's what
it's okay.
I was really focusing more on the players that I hadn't seen yet.
Sure.
That I didn't know about.
Sure. I'm not worried about Trevin.
No. We know what Trevin can do, so that I'm not concerned about at all.
C-9-3s against Cincinnati.
Exactly. So, but the other thing that really I came away with was BYU's positional versatility.
Yes.
You have so many guys. It doesn't matter who it is. If somebody needs to bring the ball up, they can bring the ball up, and not just bring the ball into the front court, but create for themselves, create for their teammates. The ability for this team to be so versatile 1-5 is something to this level. We've seen it. We saw some of it last year as well. But to this level.
Not a ton last year.
No, but to the level that we can see it this year, the positional versatility, it's incredible.
Did BYU have 2 NBA guys on the roster last year? They did not.
No.
They have at least 2 on the roster this year, which is awesome.
That's why all the scouts were there last night for a blue and white.
I was told there have been more than 20 scouts the past couple of weeks visiting BYU practice. Which is crazy.
Yeah.
There have been multiple guys from different teams which I've been told is rare. Normally it's just one scout. You know, when the Chicago Bulls show up with multiple scouts, they're looking at Yegor Demon, Cannon Catchings, and the boys.
Well, I certainly hope that the team that I root for, that may be close.
Utah, yes? Yeah, let's
paying
go.
Very close attention.
I was told there were four from the Jets.
That's what I heard, too.
Practice,
yeah, I heard that.
That's pretty wild. Okay, quick before we go to break. Men's Hoops gets 13 of the 20 Big 12 conference games on linear TV. What does that mean? ESPN, ESPN2, ESPNU, CBS Sports Network, which is tied for fourth most in the Big 12 for conference games. What does that say about the desire for TV to see BYU?
It means that BYU is something that they want to put out for other people to see, that there is interest in it. And let's just put this into perspective. 13 out of the 20 this year. Last year, BYU only had six.
Yep.
They were on, everything else was ESPN Plus.
Yep.
So they've increased BYU's linear television presence by seven games.
I don't know why they have to declare so early on that. In football, they're like, we want to wait till the 6 or 13 day window. We want to see if the teams are good. I don't know why in basketball they don't do that either. I know that you have to plan certain matchups, Big Monday and so on and so forth. But why not wait a little bit? It says exactly that. I agree. There's a demand to see this team, to see this coach, to see this group, to see some individuals that we've highlighted. That have great NBA potential. So this is exciting, man. And we're still like 3.5 weeks away from men's basketball season starting, and football is taking the spotlight that we were hoping they would.
Yeah.
So it's been awesome, man.
All right, speaking of football, number 14 BYU hosting Arizona coming up on Saturday. Hey, it's homecoming. BYU Sports Nation Game Day begins at 2 Eastern on BYU TV and on ESPN+. You can join me and Hans Olsen for the beginning of Cougar Pregame Live, also at 2 Eastern on BYU Radio. Number 14, BYU versus the Arizona Wildcats kicks off on Big Fox and on BYU Radio at 4 Eastern time.
What do we call it? Big Fox?
That's what I call it.
The mother
show is Big Noon Kickoff. Why not Big Fox?
Okay. Let's go. Coming up, Matt Brown's in studio to talk about cutting the transfer portal windows down. His unique story on members of other faiths as well who are BYU football fans. This is BYU Sports Nation. This is awesome! Hey, BYU's 5-0, baby! Let's go!
5-0 for the 8th time in program history. 3rd time under Kalani Sitake.
So I think contender in the Big 12, you have to consider them that right now.
We're live in Studio B on a 5-0 Thursday. Happy birthday to Kalani Sitake. Jerem Jordan, Jason Shepard, getting ready for the BYU Volleyball Top 25 matchup against Baylor tonight. The pink out, going to try the strawberry cougar tail.
That sounds amazing.
Favorite flavor of cougar tail?
The chocolate.
Chocolate.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
It's delicious.
Which, again, doesn't make it a cougar tail, but that's fine.
This interview should be delicious as well. Matt Brown, friend of the program, always on Zoom with the Pennants, is now in studio, of course, from Extra Points Newsletter. Matt, we've only met like twice in person now. It's great to have you in studio.
It's great to be here, too. And fellas, I came here under the guise of doing a lot of serious professional journalism and reaching out to a bunch of other institutions, but secretly, part of the reason I came all this way is I've never had a cougar tail.
Oh,
today's the day.
I think today is the day. I think I'm going to swing by the volleyball game later tonight, and I'm going to finally have this experience. When you're on a work trip, there's no such thing as calories.
No.
Yes.
It's all fine.
Everything is fat-free, no carbs.
Yeah.
I get what I call per diem drunk. Oh, yeah, I can spend that money on that. I'm good on that.
Sure.
We're good, dude. We're good.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome to Provo. We didn't think a few months ago that at this point BYU would be 5-0.
No.
And ranked number 14 and for many people, the talk of college football in some circles. What have you been impressed with the most?
I am glad to hear you say that because I was a little worried coming down here because I thought the same thing, right? I'm not an expert film and ball knower like you gentlemen or maybe some of the other people you talk to. And because my beat is so much about money, a lot of how I cover and look at college football is through spreadsheets. And the spreadsheets were pretty clear about this was maybe a fringe bowl team. This didn't have NFL talent jumping off the page. And when I tried to book this trip and set up some of these interviews, it wasn't about this team being 5-0. And so I'm happy to admit, boy, I was wrong about a lot of this stuff here on paper. I think Vegas was too. I think a lot of other people are. And what's impressive, I think for me, is how much many of the returning players have improved from last year, even with a lot of injuries, even with a step up in quality of competition. And you don't always see that a lot because college football rosters are so much more transactional and are changing 20, 30, 40% or more in a given year to be able to return people that aren't preseason five-star guys or necessarily All-Americans and suddenly have efficiency jumps like this, that's impressive. And it makes you think now, looking at the rest of the schedule, I don't think there's anything that you would say is impossible that can be done at this point. It's a great place to be in right now.
What do you make of the Big 12? Because it's what's interesting about the teams that are having success and the teams that are struggling, it's the reverse of what everybody thought. And I mean, obviously, yeah. BYU was picked 13th. Well, now they're 5-0. Well, everybody thought that Kansas and Oklahoma State were going to be right at the top, and both have struggled mightily, especially Kansas.
Yeah.
What do you make of this conference in general?
I mean, Arizona State, I think, would be another good example.
Yes.
If you had asked me in July, Houston's probably going to struggle, ASU's probably going to struggle, and BYU might be in that same conversation too, and that isn't what's happened. What I think is exciting about Big 12 football and what makes it compelling television is that there isn't a team in this league that recruits like Texas or Oklahoma. There's not going to be somebody here with a 60% blue chip ratio who is going to enter in every game as a 17.5-point favorite. There's a lot of, I think, roster parity, which then means that you have to be creative with coaching, you have to be creative with development, and you have to be ready to play and be consistent over the course of the whole season. We look in the Big Ten, or you look in the old Pac-12, there were teams that you can kind of pencil into the beginning of the year and like, this is a 3-9 team. This is our get right game. You don't really have that right now. Now, on the flip side, is there a team on paper that's like, this is our college football playoff contender? These are the two teams we need to win out so we can get two teams in the playoff. I don't think we have that. And I don't think this league's going to have that for a couple of years. But if you want to be able to say you have to watch every game because literally anything could happen, That's what you've got right now. And that is, I think, a welcome change for BYU fans from the independents, from the Mountain West, to now where you look and realize anything really is possible.
The conference context was always going to be more fun than independents. But and in like men's hoops, you were staring at Gonzaga and everybody else.
Sure.
Well, now there's three or four Gonzagas. And you hope to be in the mix, which is fun. Okay, let's talk about some of the off-the-field stuff where you specialize.
Yeah.
The NCAA gets rid of the National Letter of Intent, formerly called NLI. That's not confusing with NIL at all.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
That's what everybody thought. Like, wait, it's already, NIL's already over?
Yeah.
Like, no. NLI.
What does this mean now that they got rid of that?
So in plain English, I think what this means is now nobody in college athletics has a reason to own a fax machine anymore. So if you have a financial stake in those things, like, I got
sorry,
bad news,
Staples.
Brother. Yep, I know. You're just paper company now.
Yeah.
What we're seeing is a continuing, like, legal evolution of what the financial arrangement between school and player looks like. The National Letter of Intent was, I would not describe as a particularly athlete-friendly document. And in a world where it's pretty common now for people to transfer one, two, sometimes more than that times, and when now you have a different financial arrangements with the collective, it makes more sense to get rid of that and to have something that's a little bit more bespoke or maybe a little bit more transactional for recruiting. I think if you don't have a .edu email address, or if you're not a professional sports writer or a parent of a Division I athlete, this doesn't change things for you very much. But big picture, it's another step in realizing that what it means to be a college athlete is going to continue to change very significantly, whether that's transfer portal length, whether that's employee status, whether that's what kind of paperwork that you're signing, because it isn't the NCAA, and it isn't university presidents, and it isn't Brett Yormark that's really making these decisions right now. Fundamentally, it's about the courts and Congress looking at this as a labor issue in a very different way, which is, I understand what everybody really wants to talk about in a football show. Like, let's talk about antitrust and labor law, maybe. But that's kind of where we are.
Yeah.
So one of the other things then, obviously the transfer portal has taken over college athletics for the last couple of years. The NCAA has now shortened it. And so the window is not going to be open as long as it has been. Does that really change anything, or does it just make a shorter time period even crazier?
I think it's really more of the latter. And I not to tell tales out of school here, but like, there's what the actual transfer portal window is on paper, and then there's the amount of time that universities and collectives and agents are scouting and having conversations with potential transfers. Those two things aren't the same thing. So even if it says you've got 30 days, you might have 30 days to make an official visit, 30 days to formally do this kind of process, it's still generally happening behind the scenes. I think it's really kind of scary if you're an athlete, because you don't often have a chance to actually visit some of these other places. You have a truncated timeline. I think that can result in evaluation mistakes. It's probably not a surprise that many of the kind of players that are looking at transferring in, or that a coaching staff might target, are people that they were familiar with as recruits, because you don't have enough time to get everything done. But if you are a fan and you're hoping, okay, we're changing this window, now it's going to look more like the NBA, now we're going to have like a, this is the only free agent season and this is only basketball, I don't think that's where we are right now.
in December in football, it's weird because teams are getting ready for bowl games. And then in men's basketball, it's like the end of the second round.
Yeah.
How do you know who's gone for the next year? I'm very confused by some of these timelines. I know for football, you want to get them in for spring and so on and so forth. Opens up in the spring. Hey, I'm not playing. I'm going wherever.
Yeah.
Men's hoops doesn't make any sense to me. You're in the middle of the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, and there's no real good way to do any of this because it's also informed by academic calendars. But I think
they go to school too?
Allegedly.
I know they do here. I don't know about other places.
I mean, I'm on other places' shows. I can't tell right now, right? Right here? Yes, they go to school here. But it's this challenging thing too. I maybe fans don't always realize this, but at other institutions, the end of that football season, a lot of the assistant coaches are kind of checked out too because they're looking for their next job. And everyone's trying to figure out, where am I GAing? What gigs are going to be opening up? Everybody's looking out for themselves. And if you're not in the playoff, if you're not in a major bowl game, the head coach might not even be leading all of those meetings. That's already a pretty chaotic time. And now with athletes and their assorted entourages looking at things, trying to prepare a team and manage anything could be a gigantic mess. I don't envy anybody who's playing late in the NCAA tournament and doesn't know who's going to be on their team in 2.5 more weeks. I understand that's what the money's for. Hopefully we have a more standardized system that makes more sense in the future. But right now, I completely understand why a coach's blood is going to be 100% Red Bull come early April, because you're working four jobs at once.
As much as we would like to think that you came all the way out here just to be a guest on this show, you're actually out here for a couple of different reasons. And one of them, you're actually working on a story about fans of BYU who are not members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. What was the genesis of this?
Yeah, and I don't mind admitting that I think I may have trafficked in some stereotypes here, you know, with love about this fan base. If you think about it, I'm based in Chicago. I've lived my whole life outside of Utah. That when you typically think about BYU fans outside of this area, it's easy to think of returned missionaries or people that are fans of BYU in part because of that religious affiliation. I think if you're a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, your connection with BYU is going to be different than if you're a Catholic and Notre Dame. You can live your whole life in the United States and never meet a Notre Dame grad if you're a Catholic. If you're a Latter-day Saint, you're going to meet Y grads. But I've learned over the last several years that there's a lot of people that are not members of the church that might prefer a more traditional tailgating experience, if you know what I mean, or might have different things changed in their lives and still are really connected to this football team. And when I talk about this with my national media colleagues or friends in Illinois, like the first thought is, why? Because if you're not signing up for the whole thing, like, why are you still riding and dying for this football program? And so I wanted to come out, and I'm really grateful that so many people have reached out to me already. I've had some really great and honestly kind of emotional conversations about that. Continue to do that more reporting throughout this week and hopefully understand and be able to show with the world, this is a more diverse fan base in a lot of different ways than maybe it's easy to think about. And all of us contain multitudes in our identities. And maybe we compartmentalize one thing and another thing and maybe root for a football team that you wouldn't necessarily expect. I think it's a beautiful story.
I'm looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that.
I am intrigued by that. I wonder what that experience is like for them. And hopefully they feel super included in what happens with BYU sports. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
We look forward to it. You're going to be on BYU Sports Nation Game Day coming up Saturday as well, which will be a lot of fun. We're excited about that. And Matt, thanks for coming in, man.
Fellas, it was my pleasure. It wasn't just for the Cougar Tales. Thanks for having me.
But if that was the only reason, it'd still be worth it.
It would be just still worth it for you.
Yeah, just maybe don't tell my wife about that part. Like, no, these are for work.
Thanks, Matt. All right, BYU Women's Soccer on the road tonight. They are in Lawrence, Kansas, taking on the Kansas Jayhawks. You can check it out on ESPN Plus tonight at 7 p.m. Eastern time.
Do you think that Nate Mickle's going to be at that game?
I bet you Nate Mickle will be there.
He teaches at Kansas.
He is a professor.
Coming up on this day in Cougar history, the first win against Utah in football, highlights from the blue and white men's hoop scrimmage, and multiple winners coming up in headlines. This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Follow BYU Sports Nation on social media for content throughout the day on Facebook, X, Instagram, YouTube, and TikTok.
We're in Studio B. I am Jerem. He is Jason. It's time for On This Date in Cougar Football History as we celebrate 100 years of BYU football.
All right. We go all the way back to 1942. I remember that pregame. No.
You were there. You did it on KSL, right?
Most certainly not. October 10th, 1942, BYU's first ever win over the University of Utah. Fred Whitney and Herman Longhurst,
who can forget that?
Scored touchdowns for BYU, and the Cougars beat the Utes 12-7.
I think it was a different scoring situation. It's not like today. So there may have been multiple touchdowns. But how about that? It took a long time before BYU won another one. But we're hoping for one this year on November 9th in Salt Lake. Let's go.
Maybe it can be 12-7. Bring it all full circle.
I'd take 2-0, bro. I really would. Let's get to today's headlines.
Staying with BYU football, number 14, BYU held practice yesterday as the Cougars continue to prepare for Saturday's matchup against Arizona. Cougar offensive coordinator Aaron Roderick spoke to the media about playing against an aggressive Arizona defense.
Arizona is a good defense. They play really well together. They are very aggressive unit, very skilled, I'm impressed. I think there's, you know, all the talks about their offense, but their defense has actually played very well this year, and they're doing a good job. Very disruptive and athletic.
And if you don't have tickets, well, good luck finding some, because BYU announced that it is a sellout for Saturday. Pregame coverage for BYU and Arizona will begin 2 Eastern on BYU TV and on BYU Radio.
SeatGeek. You know, it sells out, you can buy it secondary. You can get into whatever game you want. Men's basketball held its blue and white scrimmage last night at the Marriott Center. It's the first look at BYU's talented freshman class of Yegor Demon, Kanan Catchings, Elijah Crawford, and Brody Kozlowski, as well as notable transfers Kaba Keita, who threw it down a bunch, Mawit Mag, and Mihailo Boskovic, who kept nailing threes. It was awesome.
Yesterday, the Big 12 announced that BYU men's hoops will have 13 of its 20 Big 12 conference games on linear television networks. 12 of them on one of the ESPN family of networks, one on CBS Sports Network. That's more than double the amount from last season. Also, on the women's side, BYU women's basketball, their game against Utah at home on January 25th will be broadcast on ESPNU.
And you can listen to Shep on BYU Radio as well. Gotta throw that in.
Thank you so much.
The NFC West leading Seattle Seahawks host Fred Warner and the lowly San Francisco 49ers. I kid, but I'm not. On Thursday Night Football tonight, Warner had 12 tackles last week, and he lost to the Cardinals. I hope Fred Warner just has an amazing game, but the Seahawks win.
Number 23, BYU women's volleyball hosts number 18, Baylor, at the Smith Fieldhouse tonight as the Cougars look to snap their 2-game losing streak. The match gets underway 9 Eastern. You can watch it on FS1.
Pink out, honoring those who have been affected by cancer. So wear pink to the game. Enjoy the strawberry cougar tail. Should be a lot of fun.
That sounds amazing.
I know. I'm getting hungry. Women's soccer looks to get back in the win column tonight at Kansas, also seeking its first road win of the year, BYU 0-4-2. Check it out at 7 Eastern on ESPN+.
Congrats to BYU men's golf, who won the Big 12 match play title in Houston yesterday against 13-seeded Baylor.
That's 2 with Baylor now. Let's go.
That's right. The Cougars, who were the 6th seed, beat Baylor 4-1 in the championship match.
What's up? Current BYU golfer Zach Jones received an exemption to compete in the PGA Black Desert Championship. So excited, the PGA Tour is in Utah this week. Everything's happening in Utah. We got the NHL, we got the PGA Tour, let's go! Today in Ivins, Utah, Jones joined by former Cougars Patrick Fishburn, Zach Blair, Peter Quest, and Mike Weir.
Congrats to Lexi Halliday-Lowry, who joined us on this show earlier in the week, of BYU Women's Cross Country, for being named the Big 12 Runner of the Week after taking first place at Notre Dame's Invitational last weekend.
And congrats to BYU diver Alexia Jackson-Hansen for being named Big 12 Women's Diver of the Week after winning the 3-meter and 1-meter events last week in Spencer's old stomping grounds of Grand Junction, Colorado. Coming up, the newest Deep Blue featuring tight end coach Kevin Gilbride, whose Super Bowl ring isn't his most valuable gift. This is BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation, live from Studio B. Jerem Jordan alongside Jason Shepherd. Well, it took some time for Kevin Gilbride to come around to coaching, but now he's fully embraced it, following in his father and grandfather's coaching footsteps. He looks to make an impact on the lives of all of his players.
I never knew my grandfather. He passed before I was born. The first memory I have of him being described to me was by my father.
He was enthusiastic about it because he loved doing it. He was very influential in a lot of young people's lives.
He was a math teacher and a coach. And so the teaching and the coaching and reaching young men and women was present early in my dad's life because of his father, and was present in my life because of my father.
Kevin's father was an offensive coordinator in the NFL, head coach as well in the NFL. So Kevin comes from a great lineage. He understands what it takes to be a good coach. I mean, he's seen it. He's been raised in it.
I remember when he came in as a true freshman, we kind of knew that he knew the game of football probably a little bit better and differently than we did when we were raised. And so he has high expectations of his football IQ, and he had a great football IQ.
We were really close in the year that he was here. And then I graduated and he transferred to University of Hawaii.
And then it didn't work out on the football field.
It was frustrating because that was my dream, was to start and play and then hopefully eventually get to the NFL level. But if nothing else, to play Division I football and be the starter for at least 2 years was always my goal.
And so it moved and transitioned to baseball.
Not having played a ton in baseball was then also very frustrating. And that's what was end of freshman year, then into sophomore year, and now I'm not the starter or starting in either sport. It took its toll on me. And so I had to really evaluate, you know, what was important in my life and, you know, where I was heading.
Sometimes it takes failure and disappointment to really learn, right? And grasp what your true calling is. And again, we all want to play in the NFL forever, or in the major leagues, but it doesn't happen all the time. The trick is to understand what you love and what your passion is, and then to move forward from that.
What I kept falling back on was how I was impacted in a positive way by some of my coaches growing up. Coaches who make an impact on people's lives are the guys that you know care about you. I started to realize that's what I want to do.
And he said, "Mom, sit down." I'm like, "Okay." And he was afraid to tell me that he wanted to be a coach because he knew all the trials and tribulations of the moves and the jobs and getting a job and keeping a job and all this stuff. So by the time he told me what it was he wanted to tell me, that he wanted to be a coach, I was like, that's okay. You just have to go for it and do your best, be honest, be fair, and go on with life.
How we handle when things aren't the best is I bet on myself. And when he said that, as his spouse, I bet on him too. Just those words took a lot of fear out of what can happen, because I know what he's capable of, he knows what he's capable of. We have to trust the right opportunities are gonna come, and they do and they will, and maybe not in a timeline that we would want, because you can't plan everything out in this industry, but I trust him and he trusts himself.
I've always wanted to have some separation from my dad. I didn't want people to think that I got into any position because of who he was. I wanted to have it on my own merit. But once I was in the coaching profession and I started to hear the stories about who he was as a man in the coaching profession, how he treated the custodians, the kitchen staff, the equipment guys, the video guys, I knew that I wanted to coach with him before he retired. So I was fortunate enough to be able to do that.
It was fun to watch him grow. It's obviously, it's an incredible experience. It's a nice way to pay back your family for all the sacrifices they've had made for you, to see them be part of it. And now to have your son an
also
integral part of it was incredibly special and unique.
Very special.
Being part of an organization that won a Super Bowl was an incredibly special experience, as a lot of people would expect. What I thought was special about it was our team early on in the season, we weren't clicking, we weren't connecting. Infighting, you know, some guys talking smack about some other guys a little bit, you know, just enough that it became a little bit of an issue. It wasn't like it was a huge issue, but it was enough. But the players addressed the issues and made sure everything was on the table and they fixed the problems. And watching our team come together, continue to believe in each other and play for each other, and it was a pretty special thing to be a part of. That's what you need to have, in my opinion, to win the Super Bowl. It has to be a special collection and place and time for those guys to come together like that. I don't think you win it on talent alone. I don't think you win it on coaching alone. I think it's those guys truly believing and coming together. That's what happened to us at the Giants. So we beat Tom Brady and the Patriots.
I don't know if he was supposed to be here to play quarterback. I think maybe he was just supposed to be here to get that experience and have that memory of this is a place that you can raise a family and coach football at the same time and do it at a high level. And so when the opportunity to get him came, it was easy for us to go after him.
Feels great to be back at BYU, but what really truly makes it special is the people I'm with.
I speak for everyone on our staff that we all learned a lot from him this spring, and I know his players did too.
He's done such an incredible job of just understanding, like, hey, we're building from what we've had in the past, and we'll just keep on moving forward because of it.
You can see how he commands his players in a way that he's seen a lot of football, and he's been experienced in the way that he's done things.
He's coached receivers, he's coached tight ends, he's a former quarterback. He has a command of the running game, he's a command of a passing game. I think he can observe a specific individual guy and say, here's what he needs to get better at. And I'm not sure everybody can do that.
It's overcoming adversity and understanding that you just don't give up. You continue to grow. You continue to get better. And once that becomes part of your life and how you approach your life, you're going to be successful.
I've never seen someone work as hard. His depth of knowledge is so deep that even just listening to him and his dad talk about football, it's truly like another language. And to hear them talk and to see how much they know, coupled with passion, coupled with experience, to not bet on a person like that who you also know has a really beautiful heart, how do you not? I mean, that's a person I'd want on my team.
What a great story. And if you miss any of our deep blues, you can always find them on BYUSN.com.
Coming up, Know the Foe Desert Swarm Edition. And who among you will get the elite voice of the day? This is BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
What time is it? It's time to Know the Foe Arizona Edition as we bring in our producer, Colton Potter. He'll ask us some questions and we'll probably miss them. Colton, what's up, man?
All right, what's up? Let's go with this question first. This is for you, Jason.
Okay.
The University of Arizona is located in Tucson, which is known as the sunniest city in the United States. On average, how many days per year is Tucson considered sunny?
Okay, well, I know this answer. It is guaranteed C, 340.
That is incorrect.
I said it was guaranteed, though.
I'm going D.
D is correct.
Monsoon season is a real thing, but this means there's
only
15 days a year where it isn't sunny.
That's insane.
With a cloudy with a chance of being. No.
All right, okay, Jeremy, your question. In 1885, the city of Tucson bid for a $100,000 grant but lost to Phoenix. As consolation, Arizona gave Tucson $25,000 to start the University of Arizona. What was the original grant for? Was it A, a prison, B, an insane asylum, C, a children's hospital, or D, the Arizona State Bird Observatory?
Please be B.
I'm going D just because it's fun.
That is incorrect.
I'm going to go with B.
B is correct. Oh! It is an insane asylum.
Okay.
That's how the University of Arizona was started.
I'm going to leave the jokes out of that one.
All right. Jason, your question.
Okay.
Which of the following is unique to the city of Tucson? A, most glass-blowing studios of any city in the United States. B, fastest internet in the United States. C, Stravenues, a road that runs diagonally between a street and an avenue, the only city in the U.S. that has it. Or D, the lost luggage capital of the world.
I would think that's
first
like
of all,
New York
I've
or LA.
Never heard of Stravenues, so that's where I'm going. I'm going C.
That is correct.
Oh!
The only city in the country was Stravenues.
I've never heard of that term in my life.
So you're saying there are multiple Stravenues?
Yes.
Glass blowing's big in Toledo. Spencer did a story on that
yeah.
a couple years ago. I remember.
All right, last question. This is for you, Jerem. Yep. Which president of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints was a graduate from the University of Arizona? Spencer W. Kimball, Ezra Taft Benson, David O. McKay, or Howard W. Hunter?
I'm pretty sure it was Kimball.
That is correct. It is Spencer W. Kimball.
He loved Arizona, loved Native Americans. The Swickett building on campus, by the way, the tallest building for the shortest property. The Spencer W. Kimball Tower.
So you know, Swickett. Two and two, right?
Two, two.
Two
tied?
And two. All
hey,
right.
Hey. Yeah. All right. Just yeah. get just,
the most awkward we, high five ever. Thank we, you.
High five, Top Gun.
That's going to end up on a blooper reel, that, by
that'll
the way.
Be a meme. Elite Voice of the Day presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated. What emotion describes BYU Arizona game? At Miller 15337 on X. Blue goggle, optimistic excitement. BYU wins by at least 10. Today's Rise Chat presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU.
How about the crowd that showed up for the blue and white?
So
awesome.
Good.
Lower bowl.
So, basically so good. High five.
Enough. We got to stop. We really do. It's a problem.
Thanks to today's guest, Matt Brown. Sergeant Dennis Fitta. We ran out of
time. All right. Conversation continues 24-7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows on demand, BYUSN.com.
High five. For Jason, I'm Jeremy. Shout out to Ashton Johnson. Go Cougs.